Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 31 for February 28th, 2010. Googorian Chant. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoTo Assist Express, the easy way to provide instant tech support to your customers remotely. Support smarter with GoTo Assist Express. For a free 30-day trial, go to gotoassist.com/twig. It's time for TWiG, This Week in Google, the show that covers the Googleverse and all the cloud stuff that's all around us every day. Joining us, I couldn't think of two better people to have on the show as regulars. The one, the only, Jeff Jarvis from BuzzMachine.com, a great observer of all things Google, the author of What Would Google Do, but also of the new journalism, the new press. He is a professor of journalism at the City University of New York, and it's so good to have you here, Jeff,
as always. That's the boring stuff.
That's the boring stuff. The good stuff is the book, What Would Google Do? What You Must All Buy Now. Gina Trapani's book is The Complete Guide to Google Wave at CompleteWaveGuide.com. She's also the creator of Life Hacker. Still blogs there and on her own site, smarterware.org, and is currently working to create transparency in government. Right?
Yes, sir.
Escape Labs? What is it?
Expert Labs.
Expert Labs.
ExpertLabs.org. Yeah. Yeah. Hello.
When government messes up, then they go to Escape Labs.
I don't know why Escape leapt to mind there, but it did, didn't it?
So Patterson of New York has been using its services this week.
Yeah, no kidding. What's happened? So he's decided not to run. Even though all the rumors were false, he's decided not to run.
New York politics are beyond me.
I tell you.
Jersey's enough for me.
Yeah. By the way, Gina is a Jersey girl today. That's why she's so orange. She's got the tan in a can.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Asbury Park, baby.
She was born to run. Biggest story, I guess, of the week is this weird case in Italy where the Italian courts said, what is it, three or four Google executives were guilty of wrongdoing in a video that was posted on YouTube. Up on YouTube for 2 months Now, I've seen reports that the kid was Down syndrome, another one that he was autistic. I don't know which, but of a kid being teased, taunted on this video. The video was up for 2 months. Google says the Italian police contacted us. We pulled it down within 2 hours. However, prosecutors still went after these executives and they're found guilty of not pulling it down. And the issue
of violating privacy. It was a privacy law violation in Italy.
And, of course, the issue is Google responsible for the content posted, you know, as a publisher would be, or are they a common carrier and merely, as they are in the States, required to pull it down if there's a complaint? What does this mean, Jeff? I mean, how can Google...
I think it's dangerous for the internet.
Yeah.
I think we're going to find ourselves in a position of being ruled by the lowest common denominator. And in the case of Italy, it's this law. In the case of China, it's their censorship. In the case of the UK, it's their libel tourism. Because you can be at risk. An American executive is now at risk for what someone in Italy did on a service. and it's patently absurd that Google should be expected to review all content before putting it up.
Well, I did back of envelope calculation. I hope I'm not stealing your number, but 20 hours...
I don't have one yet.
20 hours, good. But before the show's over, I'm sure you will. 20 hours of video uploaded every minute to Google. So I calculated that you would have to have three shifts of 10,000 employees each looking at video pretty much nonstop. That's 30,000 new employees just right now. And then, of course, next month it'll be more and more after that, just to review every bit of video.
And now add Blogger into that.
It's not doable.
Leo, the comments on your site and Buzz,
right,
and anything that's public, it is absurd. I mean, if I go to Buzz and say that, you know, Leo Laporte wears strange sweaters, then, you know, I'm now liable in Italy, because that's a private matter, of course. So
very.
what really happens here is that the internet itself is at risk. This is an ignorant view. These judges are not the only ones in the world to hold it, because they're thinking of the internet as a medium.
Right.
It was Doc Searles who taught me that the internet is not. It's a place. It's a place where people connect and do things, and it is public.
But let me play a little bit of a devil's advocate here. Don't they, unlike, say, the phone company, don't they benefit? Isn't YouTube making money on these posts? So in some ways, aren't they more like a publisher in the sense that they put ads next to these posts?
Well, I don't think that, it was Google Video, not YouTube.
Oh, okay. It wasn't YouTube.
And I don't think they have any ads there.
No.
So I think the answer to that essentially is no. And the phone company makes money on our phone calls. If I get a lot of people to call me by doing something scammy, then they're going to make money along the way.
Right.
So I don't think that works. The other argument is that Google, this video went, unfortunately, for the sake of mankind, had a lot of traffic for those 2 months before Google was notified and given a takedown notice. And so some would argue that Google should have known that and should have just taken it down.
Yeah.
But that's a short step from that to having to monitor and vet all content that's put up.
But it was up for 2 months. I thought that there were complaints about the video before the Italian police contact. I thought that was the issue, that Google has been contacted and they were asked to take the video down, but they didn't for a while. Isn't the 2 months really the issue?
That's a failure of
customer service.
Yeah, basically. Right. Right.
And that's a customer service issue. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying, Jeff. I think everyone knows. I don't know. I'm going to assume that everyone knows that checking everything the minute that it goes up is insane. But I do think there may be an issue of responsiveness on their end. Like if someone did contact them about this video, which it sounds like someone did, that if they should have responded sooner, unless, you know, they have a special, oh my God, it's the police filter.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
Right. Wouldn't you? I mean, it's such a chilling effect on a company that its executives could go to jail for something like this.
That's the real problem here. And then it can happen in another country. And so do we all get to the point of saying, you know, every company around now, lawyers and companies all around the world now are saying, more liability. Are you sure you want to allow communication with the masses? The masses do dastardly things once in a while. You'd better cut off all that communication, all that conversation, the entire benefit of the internet.
The title of your blog post is Italy Endangers the Web. It's not a danger to Google. It's not a danger to executives. It's a danger to us, to the web, to an open web.
You know, in the UK, they have what's called libel tourism. If you're a dastardly sheik somewhere in the world, and this has happened, and someone writes about you, and just once it's read in the UK, you can be sued under the UK's backward libel laws that you are presumed guilty until you prove yourself innocent.
Yeah.
And it's a way to harass you, and it's a way to chill speech. The Italian move is a way to chill speech. You also have Berlusconi trying to control the internet and keep people from saying nasty things about him, and there are a few nasty things to say. And then you add in Iran and China, and it becomes a real problem for the internet around the world.
What do you have? You have a balkanized web where there's a little fiefdom everywhere, and you have to, or do you have just the lowest common denominator web?
That's my fear. It's the lowest common denominator. Is it some lawyer somewhere will say to some boss,
can't do that because it's illegal in Estonia.
Right. Right. An executive who will go unnamed because he works somewhere near that company called it the Axis of Medieval. and I think that's what we're getting here is people who don't understand the essence of the web. You know, this is the problem not just in this. It's a problem that I have with newspapers, that they don't understand the economics and structure of the web, and they want to recreate their old world here. And this is a case where I think you're right, Leo. They're making a parallel to publishers because they think that the internet is a medium and is controlled and can be controlled. Instead, as you said, it's a common carrier or it's a public square.
You point out that we have Section 230 in the U.S., which says, quote, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. It's the so-called safe haven.
It was incredibly forward-thinking of Congress, of all people, to see that and to see that if we did not have that protection, we wouldn't have speech.
It protects bloggers. It protects YouTube. It protects all of us. It protects me. It protects me as a podcaster. Well, wait a minute. No, it doesn't. I'm a publisher. But it protects me in my forums.
The comments. The things that others put up on your site.
Right.
you're not liable for, and or you have a safe haven regarding. The Wikipedia page for Section 230 is very good. That goes into the case law since, and it's not perfect, but it's and I argue that's the First Amendment of the web. Somebody came in, I forget who it was, to my comments and said, "Well, no, it protects the service provider. It doesn't protect the speaker." True, but without it, we'd have no speech.
Right. You have to be able to be indemnified as a content provider, or you're not going to put any content up.
Right. You're not going to allow others to do so, and right. There goes conversation. And we're back to our medieval world of a centralized world where institutions and brands control everything, which is exactly what Mr. Berlusconi wants.
And Mr. Murdoch.
Yes.
As long as we're talking. You suggest that we have something like John Perry Barlow's Declaration of Independence for Cyberspace.
Well, which I think is a wonderful piece. It was 1999, written in Davos. There I did it again. And I recommend it highly. I think, Leo, you should do a dramatic reading of it with full verve and vigor.
John Perry Barlow should do it.
Exactly. He well could with musical background from the dead. Though that'll make it too mellow, I think. And Rebecca McKinnon, a really respected blogger and journalist about China, was arguing after the Chinese situation with Google that we needed a constitution of the web. And I fear that a little bit in that it could codify too much under law and treaty, which is not what we want if you listen to Barlow. But I do think we need a statement of rights, a bill of rights for the internet. And we need to use that as the standard and use that as the explanation of what this is. And it doesn't come from governments, doesn't come from institutions. It should come from us, the users.
You know, I might do a dramatic read. This is...
It's really quite amazing.
Barlow, who is a writer, a lyricist for the Grateful Dead, really knows, has a way with words. Listen to the first paragraph. Governments of the industrial world, you weary giants of flesh and steel, I come from cyberspace, the new home of the mind. On behalf of the future, I ask you of the past to leave us alone. You're not welcome among us. You have no sovereignty where we gather. Boy, I wish it were true.
Yeah.
It's not.
That's the expectation we have, and we need to say it.
Yeah. No, you're right. Governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. You have neither solicited nor received ours. We didn't invite you. You do not know us, nor do you know our world. I think it's really, there is a divide. And I've observed this, and I've talked about this with the friends of mine. It's even between people. Sometimes Amber McCarthy and I call the rest of the world the straights, where they just, you know what I mean? They're you know what I mean? They're the weary giants of flesh and steel. They're the old school folks who don't get what's going on in the new media and in social media in cyberspace, and kind of interpret it through their very limited perception from the past. And
like streets as in normals or streets as in breeders? We're talking normals.
Well, not breeders.
We're talking normals.
We're talking normals because there are plenty of gay straights in this case. there are people who, but it's like that. It's that same division, you know, of people who get it and don't get it.
And I used to just say they don't get it. I tried to stop myself from using that phrase, don't get it. And it's true, they don't. But in my little boring world of news and media, I came to see that we have a responsibility to educate them. Because not knowing it is what is, not understanding this world, not getting it, is what is leading to the destruction of newspapers coast to coast.
Yeah, and frankly, I agree with you, but often I just want to throw up my hands and say,
I don't get it.
Yeah.
I talked to an editor of the former editor of a prestigious paper who left in December to do foundation work. And so she's, of the old world. And she shocked me when she said, I'm getting to think that we should just let the sooner the old institutions die, the better.
Right.
And I get accused of saying that all the time. And I don't even talk that way. but I think that part of the question we have here is do we have the faith that the genius of the world, the Zuckerbergs, the Larrys and Sergeys will take over the world soon enough, and we shouldn't worry about the dinosaurs. They'll huddle together against the cold wind of the internet and perish. Or do we, who get it, we think, have some obligation to try to shake them and make them understand it?
Yeah, I mean, and somebody's pointing out in the chat room, and I think this is true, that geeks sometimes abrogate our rights and our interests by not being political. We don't. Larry Lessig's great because, we were talking with Larry about, the fight over intellectual property and the commons and all of this and this horrible copyright, infinite copyright law and stuff. And the temptation for geeks is just break the law. Say, screw it. Yes. We can get around it. We can break it. And he says, no, you can't break the law. He says, you have to change the law. The only tenable position is to say, look, if you care, don't break it, change it. And this is almost the debate between Gandhi and Malcolm X, you know? Is it civil disobedience? Is it passive resistance? Do you get political? What do you do? And I think
we recognize, as in the Google China case, that the internet is a new land.
Right.
And there is an effort to colonize it. And the King of Spain is trying to make it his.
Right. Get out of our cyberspace.
And is trying to make it hers.
Yep.
And we're trying to say, no, it's the people's. Do we need a meeting on a hot day in Philadelphia to hammer out our Bill of Rights?
This is what John Perry Barlow says. These increasingly hostile and colonial measures to place us in the same position as those previous lovers of freedom and self-determination who had to reject the authorities of distant, uninformed powers. We must declare our virtual selves immune to your sovereignty, even as we continue to consent to your rule over our bodies. We will spread ourselves across the planet so that no one can arrest our thoughts. This is 1996. It's really prophetic.
1996? Wow.
It's totally prophetic.
Yeah.
We will create a civilization of the mind in cyberspace. May it be more humane and fair than the world your governments have made before. And you could say, well, it's a little Pollyanna-ish. It's a little, but you know what? I also think it's true.
Yep.
And it's something we do need to fight for.
It's a standard we need to hold up.
Do you think that this is going to be gradual, an evolution, and that, you know, the older people who don't get it, the norms kind of fade away, or is it going to come to conflict?
I think it's going to come to conflict. That's what I've seen in the news business. The way I describe it is the internet is an avalanche, and it starts at the top of the hill closest to those things that are most like it, and that's media. That's why we think it's a medium, though it's not, because the business is similar, the interaction is similar. So look at newspapers as the canary in the coal mine as to what's happened here. And there's a lot of hostility. There's a lot of argument. There's efforts to go change laws. In Europe, we see the Germans trying to change copyright law. We see that happening in the U.S., movements to do that. So there are others trying to change the law, by the way, and make them worse. So what the hell are we doing? We're sitting by and we're not doing anything.
Yeah, I think we need a manifesto or something. We need to get off our duffs.
I don't think doing shows like this and blogging and talking about these things just the way that we do is doing something?
Yeah, it is, but is it enough?
Are we reaching the right people? We're preaching to the choir.
We're preaching to the choir somewhat. I mean, if you listen to this show, you must be somebody who gets it.
True.
I talk on the radio, which reaches a much broader, more diverse audience all the time about this stuff. And you have to be a little subversive and subtle. You can't exactly wave a pitchfork, but I think.
Right, but there you go. You're doing a radio show, mainstream radio show. I think it's important to have our little geek enclaves, like shows like this.
It's a refuge. It's a refuge.
Yes, this is where we conspire. This is the basement.
Exactly.
Where we put our little pamphlets.
This is our cell.
This is our mimeograph. Leo has given us the mimeograph machine. But now we have to go to his morning show coming soon from New York start to speak to a different audience. Chat room, does anybody here disagree with what we're saying right now?
Of course not.
Or are you all the choir?
They're all the choir, aren't they? They're in the chat room for crying out loud, right?
Yeah, but they're going off into the world. They're all, they're normal companies and they'll spread the word there. We're infecting them.
There you go. Right? So that's exactly the message.
Let's give them the tools to better infect.
Yeah.
Let's give them the...
That was Larry's message, is don't break the law, change the law. And so, geeks don't want to be political. We don't want to get involved, but we've got to. Otherwise, That's I think probably the thing that is missing is this sense of urgency. And maybe this Italian court decision will help a little bit in that sense of urgency. It isn't a given that we will have an open internet forever. It could be destroyed easily.
And it could be used to change other pieces of law, again, like copyright. And
it is. Look at this the crazy ACTA treaty. I mean, yep. they're trying to get this stuff by us. So you don't
Gina, you seem more optimistic.
I guess I am. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too young. I don't know. That just seems crazy. I'm like, that's never going to happen. that's my reaction.
Leo and me, it's bringing out our old children of the 60s thing. We're going to grow our hair.
And right. It's true. Sides and but it gives me hope anyway that the young person like Gina sees this transformation happening.
Yeah. Maybe I'm totally naive, though, and I feel, you know, and I just haven't, you know. I don't know. That seems like it'll never happen. But you're absolutely right. And I'm actually feeling a lot of guilt for not working more to change the law and breaking it more.
No guilt.
No guilt. It's an important point. And it's something I think that we should probably all take to heart. Although it does seem hard to believe. I mean, you know, I read Jeff's piece about Italy and I agree, but I guess I felt like, I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of a nerd about this, but I kind of felt like, well, maybe there just needs to be better procedures for, you know, complaining about content and you know, helping Google make that decision faster. The 2 months,
I think that's true too. In fact, I think the way to do that is crowdsourcing.
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
Google's greatest weakness. I'm sorry, Gina, go ahead.
No, I mean, I think Google's biggest mistake was just not being more responsive or not having the controls to bubble up the stuff that's upsetting people, that people are complaining about. Because I'm sure people complained about that video and that video got a lot of views. So Google should have just been more responsive to that stuff. So that's
the problem, Gina. If the standard is it offends someone, then we're in the same boat. Because everything will offend someone somewhere. And so Google would prefer to have an official notice of takedown so that it can say to its audience, that's why I took it down, not just because we didn't like it. Because then they're in the boat of saying, why did you take this down, not that down? Gee, you took it down when it was the Down syndrome kid, but it wasn't when you had just the geeky kid. You know, what gives here, Google? And they're in a difficult position then. I think that their audience could help, not in the sense of if just someone complains, because then you're in Howard Stern land. You're right. In the world of three people complaining about a show and the FCC dorks giving it a big fine. But I think you could have a trusted jury of Google users who could alert Google. I think they're in the same boat when it comes to advertising problems. When they decree a site, a spam site, and the site says, no, this is our service, we're an aggregator, Google finds itself in a position, I think it's the one greatest weakness they have, because they have to act like a monopolist then. They just decide on their own. And I think it'd be better off to have a jury of those advertisers' peers decide what it is.
Absolutely. I think that's a good solution, partially solution.
This is something we're going to be talking about a lot for a long time. But I'm going to take a break right now. We're going to come back and talk about more assaults on our freedom from our own people. Facebook tries to patent the news feed. Actually succeeds. And apparently there's some additional patents coming down the pipe from Facebook. That are even worse. China.
What is up with that?
Yeah, what is? Come on.
They're gonna patent getting laid from the internet.
They might have a case there. That's what they should be patenting, not the news feed. Also, antitrust accusations against Google and Street View in trouble in Europe. China widens its net censorship, and now the number of companies who were hacked in that China Google hack has widened to a bigger number. I don't want to say any numbers in case it's Jeff's.
I don't have it on. I'm going to use this.
Okay. You now have 60 seconds to get a number. And Gina, you get a tip. And who's going to help me get a tool? I'll let the chat room do that. But first, I want to tell you about a great tool if you are in the support business. It's GoToAssist Express from the folks at Citrix. Now, you know, Citrix, it's the name in enterprise for remote access. They licensed their remote access technology to Microsoft. That was the beginning of RDP. They've created really great consumer versions of their remote access with GoToMyPC and GoToMeeting, and now GoToAssist. GoToAssist is for the IT or support professional, the person who has to support software, maybe even the alpha geek in a family or a group where the person who gets called upon to fix her friends and relatives' computers. This is a program that will make it so much easier for you. If you've ever had to do this on the phone, just the ability to reach out into somebody's computer, however far away they are, and fix it is just a blessing. You don't have to have it pre-installed on Aunt Matilda's computer. Uncle Bertie, you just send him an email saying, Bert, click this link or go to assist.com, start a session, and I can get into your system and I can fix it. And not only that, I will know what operating system you're running, what security software you're running, what's running in the background. If you're a pro, you can have 8 sessions at once. So that means you can start a scan or install on one and move to the next, no wasted time. You can do unattended sessions. Once you get it set up, you know, then anytime you want to get in there, if they give you permission, obviously, for security reasons, you can fix it. Or even like if you've got like a malware bytes or a reg hack or whatever, you want to copy it over, you can do that. This thing is made for the support professional, and you can try it free for 30 days. I want you to try it now by going to gotoassist.com/twig. That's G-O-T-O, assist.com/T-W-I-G. Go to Assist from Citrix. It is a great product. We thank them for their support of This Week in Google. Hey, guys, I have to get you. I got you something, and then you're going to get it in the mail in the next couple of days. But do you mind if I show you ahead of time?
Not at all.
Oh, I got to go over here and get it. Hold on. I hate surprises, yeah.
Oh, this looks good, Jeff. This looks really good.
Like, I saved one for myself, and I thought, you know, we're gonna do This Week in Google at South by Southwest, and I thought that, and so I sent you all of these, and you have to bring it. It is an official Google Slanket.
Nice.
Yes.
Slanket.
Yes. You all get one. Very soft. Very plush. Very downy.
Couldn't bring myself to buy because I was embarrassed, but always desperately wanted. Nice.
So.
Oh, my wife is going to be thrilled about this.
I almost sent you two, Gina. Then I thought, well, I have to send everybody two. So if you want more.
Oh, my wife wouldn't wear it. I guarantee you, Leo.
That's it. Exactly.
Oh, no. But, she's just going to make fun of me when I put it on.
Gina, it's big enough for two.
Awesome.
I mean, it's big enough for a house, frankly. It's huge. But there you go. And it says Google right on it. There it is on the pocket. Special pocket. Wow. Just the right size. And even has a little. You know, just the right size for maybe an iPhone or an iPad, right in there.
Oh, or a Nexus One.
Wait a minute. What am I saying? That's the Nexus One pocket.
So we get bonus points for walking around South by Southwest in that.
You know, you can't walk in it. It's like
it will look like Google Monks.
Okay, maybe. Yeah, we totally will, especially if you go. You put your, because his sleeves are, oh, Google, oh, Larry and Sergey and every guest.
That is fantastic.
We shall be open to no evil.
Isn't it great? Oh, I just, so Google sells these. I saw them online at Google. Yeah.
More evidence of how they ruin society.
They don't call it a Slanket or a what's the other? They're Slanket, Snuggly, right? They don't call it that. Snuggy, whatever it is. They just say
it's a
yeah, I don't know. I guess they don't want to infringe on anybody's trademarks, but it's so soft.
Oh,
lovely.
I'm so
never set it on fire. I suspect it'll poison you.
Yeah. Oh, are you kidding? No open flame near this thing. You'll go up.
And if you wear it and have your laptop in your lap and you search Google, your search results come across twice as fast.
Twice as fast.
I think we've got to rehearse the chant, the Gregorian. I like Gina's idea that we're monks. We got to come up with a Gregorian chant to do on the show there.
Oh, Larry, Harry. And we'll come up with something. I'll write something up.
Italy is bad. China is bad.
Algorithms first. People later.
Oh, Python, we love you. So, yeah, I thought we'd have fun at South by Southwest. We can all wear our Google
slankets. Awesome. Thanks, Leo. Yeah. I'm excited.
So, Gina, I'm going to give you a chance to retract your swipe recommendation from last week.
Ooh.
Yes, wow. I am. I'm going to retract my swipe recommendation.
Who knew?
Swipe very much. I know. I like Swipe very much, and I posted about the beta, the leaked copy. It wasn't even a beta. It was a leaked copy, and I should have said this. I should have emphasized this a little more last week. I should have said that it was a leaked copy, that it wasn't coming. It's not in the market. Because the Swipe team contacted me and said, hey, you know, we don't have a downloadable version of Swipe, and that's intentional. Their business model is OEM deals. Only certain phones will ship with Swipe. So forget I ever said the word Swipe. And instead...
I took it off immediately. No, you know, it was good actually that you did...
going to an Italian jail any minute.
Yeah. No, yeah, it was good that you did that, because that they had never said this, and nobody knew.
I don't, you know, whatever. Their business model, cool. I wish them the best.
What it's a strange business model because,
it is,
as people in your blog pointed out, we all want to buy one,
and they won't
sell it.
Right. So go into the Android market and search for ShapeWriter, and it is fully supported, downloadable Android keyboard replacement that does exactly what that other program does. You can, you know, swipe your finger across the keyboard to type words. It actually offers like dictionary suggestions the way that Android's default keyboard does, which is super useful. And it works just as well. It's fully supported. There's no weird errors. You'll get updates through the market as usual. So ShapeWriter.
Is it basically the same thing where you just draw the...
Exactly the same functionality. Yep. Works really well.
Sorry, Swipe.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Sorry. Whoops.
They said our model is to... Our business model is OEM licensing. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Good luck.
Whatever you want.
That's cool. Hey, I mean, you know.
It's their business. They can choose a business model.
Absolutely.
But as somebody pointed out in your comments, in the comments on your blog, you got a product people want. People are downloading it illegally. They're offering to pay for it. They're saying, we will buy it. Please
proven put it, marketplace.
Proven marketplace. And you say, no, you can't have it. I'm glad I'm not investing in Swipe. That's all I can say. But anyway, we apologize.
I'm sure Swipe is now very glad to go after you, Gina.
She did nothing wrong. She did nothing wrong. And no. It wasn't clear that was a, you know, a pirated version or anything. It just was, you know, it was floating around. I had it too. It's
geeks trying things and giving them feedback, which would be very valuable to them.
So in a way, you gave them a chance to tell people that that's not what we're, you know, that's not a legitimate version. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. And to find a better one, ShapeWriter.
Yep.
Which I immediately installed.
Good, good, good.
So Facebook can't even say it with a straight face. Patents the news feed. This is the patent. They got it on Tuesday for, quote, dynamically providing a news feed about a user of a social network. I mean, I guess you could say that they copied it from Twitter, but Twitter neglected to patent it.
Thank you, Twitter.
They applied for the application in 2006, which, by the way, is before Twitter existed.
Well, the feed existed before Twitter, didn't it?
You'd think that, I mean, a news feed, well, I don't know. I mean,
isn't a news feed a blog? I mean, what are they trying to patent brevity? Like,
you're right.
Isn't a feed of updates or reverse chronological order? I mean, really, at this point? I don't know.
You can't blame a company for trying to patent something that they think they created. But I actually blame the patent office for not...
For approving it?
Approving it.
But what is the point? So you file a patent, why? So you can sue other people, right? I blame a company for that.
Or so you can keep others
from
harassing you, but in which case, say so.
And a lot of patents are, in fact, applied for that reason. We have no intent of forcing people to license it or keeping people from using it. We want to make sure that there's no issue about us using it. So here's the patent.
2006 was the furor over it.
Okay.
And when did Twitter launch?
Twitter, I signed up for Twitter December 2006, but they were around in I think, late summer or even summer 2006. So they were around before then. Which might have been why Zuckerberg et al. Filed the patent.
March 2006.
I don't know. That's right about the
same
time.
That's what it says here, yeah. Wiki Answers. Answers.com.
That's right about the same time. So here's the diagram in the patent. Start. Generating news items. Attaching informational links. Attaching active links. Limiting number of viewers. Assigning an order. Displaying news items. That's the patent. That's the process that's patented right there. I guess, you know, if it's very specific and that's kind of what they've got a patent for, I guess that's okay.
So I'm looking at this article and there's a last graph that says, it appears this patent surrounds implicit actions. Right. This means status updates, which is what Twitter is based on, are not part of this patent.
In other words, because Twitter's explicit, it's kind of somebody did it, wrote it. Right.
This is about stories about the actions of a user's friends.
It's automatically generated.
Right. So automatically generated sort of, and even like metadata, right? So Leo, you friend someone else, right. I'll see that in my newsfeed, that kind of thing.
Okay. I can give them that.
I still wish they'd say that they're not going to try to hold on to it, but they're a company that kind of does do that.
Well, is there anybody else who does that?
Well, if you see what your friend, I don't use Netflix, but do you see what your friends there are, yes. are renting?
Yeah, the Netflix feed, you can subscribe to a friend's feed.
Yeah. And, you know, the argument I make is that the winner in social will not be a service we all sign up to because the internet is the social network.
Right.
And the winner is he or she who brings organization to that.
Right.
And so that's the risk of this one, I think, is that what you want is something that pulls together in some algorithmically clever way and prioritizes for you stuff your friends are doing on Facebook and Twitter and Netflix and Buzz and wherever.
Right.
That's what we need.
I felt very bad last week, because we at the end of the show had ended and I brought up Demand Media. And we started what I was an incredible conversation, but Jeff, I knew you had to go to pizza. So I cut it off.
For the sake of my marriage,
yeah.
Let it go.
I cut it off, and I got a lot of heated mail from people saying,
"Really?
Well, they were really fascinated by it, and they said you this great conversation starts and you stop it." But the real mistake I made was that I started it, so we can continue it now. And in fact, there's a very interesting article in b2bmemes.com that actually quotes Matt Cutts talking last week on This Week at Google about these content farms, and what they took from the conversation that we had last week is that Google might in fact want to rein this in.
Yeah, Matt was not cleverly, because Matt is very smart, and he was not explicit about that. But what he said was that they're going to try to get more links to original content, original creation, and have signals of quality. So
that's what you want.
All you do is rewrite the 87th page about how to fix your toilet.
Right.
You shouldn't, even if you have great SEO, that's gaming Google. You shouldn't rise up. You know, Bob Vila's magnificent masterpiece about fixing toilets should rise up because it's original and high quality.
And you actually then blogged on Monday about this a little bit.
A little bit. I also, full disclosure here, I think I mentioned on the show or after the show last week that I was asked to join an advisory board of Demand,
yep.
and I declined.
Right.
Passing up stock that probably will be worth something when they go to the IPO, but you know, other things matter here. And I don't do it as a condemnation of Demand, because my real problem here is that I think that Demand Media had some key insights that matter for everybody, and I point that out, and that's seen as positive, and so I don't want people to think that I'm saying tolerant or positive things out of a financial interest.
Right.
And the key insights from Demand Media are, number one, that they listen to what the audience wants, and that's what they create.
Which is not a bad thing.
No, it was such a ding moment for me. When I consulted for About.com, I saw them do that. They checked their search queries.
Yeah.
And right, if they had people asking a question for which they didn't have an answer, they wrote the answer.
It's just a formalized way of doing what a lot of media does, which is serve its audience.
Right, but we didn't do that in old media. We just said, I can decide what you want and what you need.
It's one of the reasons I liked talk radio and I like doing a call-in radio show, because you answer the questions people are asking.
Yeah.
So in a sense, that's Demand Media too, isn't it?
Right. And the other thing they did is that they cut up the task of creating a piece of content into 11 discrete pieces and job that out in the marketplace. So they'll pay you $20 to write that toilet page or make that toilet video.
Right.
And somebody else will copy edit it, and somebody else will fact check it, and so on and so forth. The copy editor, I think, will make about $2.50 for doing that.
Wow.
And people are up in arms about that. And I understand that it's harsh, but welcome to capitalism.
If that's what people, yeah.
If there are people willing to do it.
Yeah.
But where I think Demand's going to get hit, and there's plenty who are somewhat like this. You have Associated Content and Suite 101, where the writer decides what to write still. You have About.com that has dedicated guides. You have the upcoming seed at AOL, which is trying to figure out what it wants to be. And though I think I saw somebody tweeted this week that there was an assignment on Seed to name the prettiest news anchor in your market. That's improving the world, but fine.
Ugh.
Yeah, exactly. So these are all different models, and demand really, you know, took it to a new level. And but I think that what Matt said on the show last week is really, really, really important, because it's Google saying, it's recognizing that they've got to find signals of quality and creation.
That's the key. It's not about how cheap it is. It's not about how it's generated. It's about whether the content has quality and you want to surface the best quality content,
period. And it is Google's interest to do so.
Yes. You don't want to be fooled by SEO. You want to have the best quality content surface.
And the more search becomes... Go ahead, Gina.
I was going to say, on their European public policy blog, Google posted like their three main elements of their search philosophy. And the first one is, not surprisingly, algorithmically generated results. The second one is no query left behind. And the third one is keep it simple. So the no query left behind means that when they get complaints about one query not returning good results, they don't go in and edit, you know, the results for that one query. They make a generalized improvement that's supposed to, you know, improve an entire class of queries. So I mean, what Matt's saying is like, yes, we know that these content farms may not have the best quality content. It's up to us to refine the algorithm to the place where it can figure out, you know, regardless of who, you know, created it or how much it cost.
Right.
And actually, I love the last graph of this post. The author pointed out that if you search for the words search engine on Google, the first results are Alta Vista, Dogpile Web Search, Bing, and Ask.com. So, I mean, that's pretty amazing. I mean, that's certainly an algorithm.
You know,
well, and that goes to another issue for Google this week, is that there were three complaints of antitrust put up against them, arguing that Google is favoring its own stuff. Well, name me a media site that doesn't promote its own stuff.
Do you think that's why you find Alta Vista, Dogpile, Bing, and Ask on this search page? Is because Google's trying to avoid accusations of that?
I mean, they seem to be using that. Yeah, I mean, they're using that to prove, like, hey, our algorithm is not biased.
Well, come on, though. No, in fact, if you look at this result, it's like the worst possible.
And actually, the last sentence of that post is, I guess I'd better get back to work. Saying those are crappy results.
Those are not good results. It almost is like Google bent over backwards to show the worst possible result.
Right. So maybe they were using, you know, if you're a cynic, you think, well, they set that up just so they could make that point. But I don't know. I don't know if they go to that trouble.
Yeah.
I don't think they've got editors that is there controlling search results. They take a lot of pains to make sure that everyone understands that it is an algorithm.
I remember talking with Larry and Sergey, but back when Google was actually reaching out to journalists because they wanted coverage or something.
Because they like needed coverage.
Yeah, it must have been very early.
Just getting it. Yeah.
I remember going to a dinner. PR people invited us to a dinner in San Francisco South Park. Very nice restaurant. Larry and Sergey were there. They gave us all those Google Brio trains. You know, they say G-O-O-G-L-E. And Larry and Sergey answered questions. It was great. I remember talking to them. And one of the things they said, which I thought was very interesting, and I just can't remember the exact details, is that I think it was Larry every day would look at the tail end of search, like the dregs at the end, what was left, and was always every day trying to improve that algorithm. So yeah, no search left behind, and not doing it, as you say, by hand, but improving the algorithms.
It's the only thing that scales, right?
Yeah, and I just thought that I to be honest, I was really impressed that it was an engineering answer to the question that really made sense to me.
Because we're all in love with that idea.
Yeah, we love that. Yeah. We love the idea that there's a perfect algorithm.
Right. Yes, yes. And that's why we love humans. Google.
There we go. Wait a minute. Let me write that down.
It's like the idea that could exist is just so appealing that it just makes me love Google more.
Yes.
It's a trap. It's a geek PR trap.
They fool me.
It's like, I'm just going to keep working on my algorithm the rest of my life. Will work out.
It'll work out. It will. Just one rule to rule us all.
It's a better algorithm, man.
So the Europeans are mad because Google... Okay, Wired reports, the European Commission has acknowledged receipt of three antitrust complaints against Google. Google said, we've done nothing wrong. And disclosed that British price comparison site Foundem, French legal search engine eJustice.France and Microsoft-owned Chow from Bing were the complainants. So the people complaining are other search engines. They say Google abused its dominant position to promote its own services while competing sites were penalized.
Right, we're right back into Microsoft land, aren't we? You're using your dominant position with the operating system to promote your browser. You're using your dominant position with search to show YouTube videos.
But this is what Google has consistently said, and they said it again in their response. Our algorithms aim to rank first what people are most likely to find useful. And we have nothing against vertical search sites. I mean, indeed, many vertical search engines like those three or moneysupermarket.com typically rank high in Google's results.
Here's the problem. When you get to court and discovery, is Google going to have to hand over the algorithm? Coke formula.
Can't they do it just empirically and do some searches and say, here's what we got?
They've got to prove at some point that it is the algorithm that does it, don't
they? Yeah.
I mean, if it gets to court, it's really a, well, I'm trying to use a podcast safe word.
Go ahead.
A bozo thing for Microsoft to do.
BS thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. This is a good...
Microsoft uses MSN and MSNBC to promote its stuff.
Yes, everybody does. What do you think I do?
Yahoo uses their homepage to promote their stuff.
Right. But I guess if you're saying we are an agnostic search engine that's going to produce the best results, you should do that, whether that's Google or not.
They say they do.
China has widened its net censorship. It's not going the right direction. It's, I guess at some point Google's going to have to make good on its promise and pull out. The Chinese government is, according to Wired's threat level blog, David Kravitz writing, the Chinese government is imposing new internet restrictions demanding personal website operators to acquire government permission to operate their sites. This is for all .cn domestic domains.
Yeah, that to Iran killing Google Mail and requiring everyone to use the government's email
system. Oh, horrible. Horrible. Of course, you know, geeks, the first thing to do is get a proxy server running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's obvious. Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. That's why God created Tor. The government said the latest move, which also requires site owners to submit a photograph and show identification... You probably should have to hold up a newspaper with today's date on it, was targeted at tackling pornography. That's what they always say in China. Oh, no, it's about pornography. Critics say, of course, it's based on silencing dissent. So since China does not seem to be moving forward in opening itself, when is the deadline? When does Google pull the plug?
They didn't say it. It was Eva. But nothing keeps on giving me crap on Twitter saying they haven't done it yet. And I said, well, they didn't say that when they were going to do it. There's obviously, diplomacy takes time, and Google's a nation now.
Do they have to wear like those big sashes across the chest and morning coats?
I'll bet Larry and Sergey would like that.
I would love it.
Marissa might too.
What was that? And I don't know if this really happened or not, but Steve Jobs supposedly went around to the Wall Street Journal and other New York newspapers to coerce them into creating content, the Times, to creating content for the iPad. But the Scandal Journal report of it said that he was wearing a strange top hat when he was doing it. They didn't mention a sash, however. I don't know what, I don't even know what that could be. I would like to see a picture of that. Nexus One may be coming to Verizon March 23rd. Isn't that the first day of spring? First day, that's what they said, spring 2010. This is according to neowin.net, which is a rumor site. That would be, it would be also the first day of the CTIA Congress, which is a big cell phone conference.
So do we regret getting the T-Mobile version?
No, I like GSM.
And I agree, but I've got to tell you, T-Mobile is worse than I was just down in Florida visiting my parents, and it's not.
Yeah, but I'm getting some dropouts.
Even versus AT&T. Gina, how's your experience with it?
My experience has been pretty good. I tell myself it's because like San Diego's a second-tier city, so things are not too bad. So one of the advantages. But it's been okay, even on the road.
You know when the test will be? When we're in Austin for South by Southwest, and all those geeks with their iPhones are going...
Exactly.
And we're going, well, I seem to have three bars here.
Yeah. Exactly.
Can I make a call for you? Would you like me to do an internet search for you?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I've talked to my brother for about an hour today on my phone, and he was on his iPhone, and the call dropped 3 times on his side. And he was just like, oh, sorry, I got an iPhone. Like, he didn't even...
and everybody goes, okay.
It's you.
Sure.
Anyway.
Of course, you have an iPhone. Well, of course, we didn't expect that call to survive. Lifehacker has a list of the top 10 Android apps.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to... I bookmarked that, especially for Jeff. Kevin wrote this at Lifehacker. Kevin is a Twig listener, and he is also my, like, Android guru. Really, we need to have Kevin on sometime.
Let's have him on next week.
Yeah, he's got the goods. I'm going to ask him. I'm glad you said that publicly, because now he can't say no.
Come on, Kevin. We're going to... Here, we'll give you a nice plug for your article on Lifehacker. He recommends number 10, Layer. That's the augmented reality browser. You know, this is cool, totally useless, but it's kind of cool. I mean, it's totally useless. Do you use it for anything? I use it to show off the Nexus One.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of one of those novelty things, but worth it. I mean, it's definitely a, ooh, this is cool kind of app. I can't say that I use it a lot, but I think it was worth being on the list.
Oh, Listen. Yeah. Listen, which I do use, and it was just upgraded, which really made it, frankly, a lot better. Got rid of some of the things.
That syncing to Google Reader.
Yep.
Key. Anycut, which is a supercharged shortcut manager. You can add shortcuts to your desktop. And that's just something the iPhone doesn't do. You just can't. There are just certain kind of shortcuts that you can't put on your home screens on the iPhone. Anycut is really great. Secrets, which is a kind of password pin secure.
Oh, it's KeyPass compatible, because I use KeyPass. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, you use KeyPass, you can transfer your KeyPass database onto your phone and Secrets will open it.
Neat.
Slide screen, which I tried out for a while and really, really liked. Didn't wind up using it continuously because it didn't support my Google Apps account. But if you're using just your Gmail account, Slide screen is pretty fantastic.
So what does it do?
It replaces your home screen with a kind of newsfeedy like view of your information, your most recent SMS messages, your most recent email, your Twitter stream, and you can kind of slide up and down the screen and expand different sections of the screen to read more. Hmm. And it's just beautiful, and it looks really good. Try it out. The free version has a little ad at the bottom. There's a premium version. Get rid of the ad. Like I said, I had a little trouble with my Gmail versus my regular Google account versus my Google Apps account. But for someone going straight to Gmail, it's fantastic.
I always buy the premium version, even if I don't think I'll use the program again or whatever. I just want to support Android developers. And it's $1. It's $2. I just want to give them money so that they know that there's a market.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
It's just my little way of saying, come on, keep going.
Keep going. Google Dropper, which we talked about last week.
Great program.
PDA Net, which we... Yeah,
yep, Google that's from you. I got that. Yep, yep.
Yeah, PDA Net we talked about for tethering, for, you know, straight up tethering, no rooting.
Now, I use a different task killer, so I'm going to have to look at this new one. Task killer free.
Yeah, I actually haven't used task killer.
What do I use? It's...
But I have gotten questions about how do you GTD on your phone? What's your tasks on your phone? And...
Well, no, this is for killing not to-do list. This is for killing running tasks.
Oh, yeah, okay. I use something called
Advanced Task Killer. That's what I use.
Gotcha.
And so I think they're probably all the same. This one has a little ad at the bottom, so it's free also, but you just kill everything that's running. Boom. Boom.
Nice.
It's very satisfying.
Yeah.
And have you noticed, I'm noticing a little bit of lag sometimes on this, and sometimes I'll turn it on and it won't recognize my finger presses right away, which is very frustrating. You can't get into it.
Yeah, I have the same problem. I don't even have, I shouldn't say this, but I don't have a code on it.
I just gave mine away.
Just turning it on has the same problem for me.
you just gave yours away.
Anybody want to see that again? Let me just do that again. Jeez Louise, it's that, you know, just so you know what my password is. It's so funny because I don't know. Are Google people more? Because the iPhone, it's a number, but on the Google, you draw a pattern. And it, I'm not. I'm. I could remember the number easily. I could the patterns. I had to like. I forgot it. I had to try and try it again.
Oh, interesting.
I couldn't remember the pattern. Save
and also,
life.
I mean, the screen. It's like if the screen is clean and you do your pattern, like you can see.
That's a good point. I didn't even think of that.
It away. Like you had to do it. I didn't even think of that.
You're right. Look, there's the smear.
Yeah, exactly. The smear, the finger grease smear.
So you should change your pattern every day and then clean the screen.
Speaking of smears.
Yes.
So I went to Best Buy, who I love, and full disclosure is that I've they brought me out there, and I got the screen protector that they have in the store, and it's kind of jelly-ish. And
ew.
I like it.
I don't want a gooey screen.
I love the one that I have for my iPhone, which is the crystal one they sell in the store.
Right.
Which the store was nice enough to put on for me. Any recommendations from anybody about do you guys use a screen protector for this thing?
Nah.
Macho, I don't. Huh? It's my phone is naked.
Me too. I even got rid of the case.
I went through a phase where I covered everything and a jello skin and the whole thing. And then finally I was like, you know what? Like, the whole point is that you use it.
It's so beautiful. And that's exactly right. In a year, this is going to be crapped up no matter what you do, right?
Yeah. But now I feel like I'm just not being helpful at all to Jeff.
That's all right. That's all right.
The one that you got, obviously. No,
it's so pretty.
I've got one of those, you know, keyboard protector things, like those little rubber things are for my keyboard, really for crumbs, because
you eat while you're typing.
Yeah, but it always gets me looks when people see me on my laptop.
Do you have like plastic on your sofa?
It's the keyboard condom. No, it's no plastic on the sofa, but it definitely is a keyboard condom. but no protector on my phone. So I guess it's, you know, we're all anal about something.
I used to have the silicone case and everything because it is a little slippery and it's thin, but it's just so beautiful and elegant the way it is. I like to have it just plain. And you know what? I'm going to have another phone in a month anyway, so what does it matter? You know me.
But for people like Jeff and I who commit to
phone. Oh, you're committed. Oh, no. I'm a little butterfly that flits from phone to phone. Don't ask me to commit.
Fickle Leo.
Fickle. Number two is Wave Secure, which I don't know. It's free till March 31st, though, so get it. What does this do? This backs up all your data.
Yeah, it backs up your data and locks it down. I didn't know about this one either. But you can do a remote wipe. It backs up your phone's data to
I have another program that I use that's similar to that that also does an antivirus scan. I don't know how useful, but it does an antivirus scan of everything when I download it. It's called Lookout, and it's also free. And it has a backup. It has the antivirus data backup, and it also has a missing device. Doesn't have the wipe now, but maybe it does. Let's see what the missing. Locate your device or make it scream from mylookout.com. So mylookout.com. Yeah. So that if you like lost it in a sofa cushion.
Yeah.
You can make it go, I'm over here. So I use this. I don't know. It has a virus scan and it scans new downloads. And I don't know. I have no idea if there's any merit to that at all.
I wonder how long is it going to take until malware makes it into the market?
That's inevitable, right?
That's when we know that Android viable market. Right. That's like it's like a really it had got market penetration when there's a virus or malware in the market. I hope that doesn't happen.
These things are such obvious targets because all you have to do is make a phone call to a special number that costs you $40, and the bad guy gets $30, and it was worthwhile. Let alone all the data you got on there.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I also use this called Astro File Manager.
And this, yes.
This lets you actually look at your files.
Ah.
Yes. Which is important to every geek. One must be able to get access to the file system, even though a lot of UI designers would say, the file system should be abstracted away from the user. You shouldn't have to look at it. I don't know. I like being able to browse my folders.
Yes. Yes.
Right to browse my folder.
It just seems like if it's got a file system, I should have access to it.
Yeah.
Bugs the heck out of me on my iPhone. For some reason, I cannot get my photos off the iPhone. Nothing will take them off. And I just want to say, well, let me browse the file system and then get them and figure out what's wrong with them. But I can't. So this is nice. It's nice that they have it. It exists. So we'll get Kevin on. Kevin Purdy, lifehacker.com. That was his article. Did you get a number yet? A tip? A tool? Do you want to just take the day off?
Can we talk about Gmail?
I've got a number if you don't go to the news. You just took one. 323 was the first one I had, which was a cheat. I know.
What Gmail? Oh, yeah.
Gmail stuff. Yeah, Gmail.
What's the deal?
Yeah, so Gmail graduated a bunch of Labs features and retired a few. So I love the whole Labs thing that they did. So that, you know, they have these experimental features. Any Google employee can plug them in, and anybody, you can enable them or disable them, and it comes with this disclaimer that they might just break. And what I love about it is that Google is using usage numbers based on who's enabled, how many people have enabled each one to decide which one of these features should get built into Gmail by default and which should we get rid of entirely. So they use that feedback. So that I think, when Labs launched, I actually flew to Mountain View. It was one time that I went to Google. They launched, I think, with 13. The number of features grew to 60. And so this past week, they graduated six. Search autocomplete, which you'll see when you just start to search from your Gmail search box, you'll see an autocomplete drop down. Go to label, which is a keyboard shortcut thing. The forgotten attachment detector, which is brilliant. If you type like, hey, I've attached this file and hit send without actually attaching the file, Gmail will pop up and say, hey, did you mean to attach something before you send? YouTube previews, which is just, embeds a video in your mail. Custom label colors and vacation dates. So those are now built into Gmail based on usage in Labs. They're now built in Gmail. And then they retired a bunch. Muzzle, fixed width font, email addict, location and signature, random signature, presumably because folks just weren't using them. So I'm excited about that. So you'll see some new stuff in your default Gmail. And I mean, the only way that I think that they can make Labs better is if regular people could contribute features.
Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
It would be nice. Kind of like Wave extension.
Well, you wrote the Better Gmail Firefox extension. I mean, that's one way to do it, is to kind of do it from the outside.
Do it from the outside. But the thing that's crappy about that is that the minute they changed HTML, right. It's all a JavaScript. The minute they changed HTML or any of the user interface, it's not an official API. You know, it's like, then stuff breaks. So, that's one way to do it, but certainly more efficient to do it. From the inside out. So that's what I really like about Labs. And also it's great because a lot of the Labs features, in fact, when I went to the Google campus and they announced Labs, they actually had a printout of all the user scripts that I had included in the Better Gmail Firefox extension taped to a whiteboard and said, like, we started with your extension and tried to make a Labs feature, which was a huge, like such a compliment for me. And someone said to me, like, well, were you upset that they were basically, making your, parts of your extension, not necessary? And I was like, absolutely not. I mean, anything that I can take out, it'd be great. Right. If I can simplify it further, fantastic. So I really dig the labs model. And I really like that they change, that they're evolving Gmail based on usage with these experimental features.
Cool. So if you go to Gmail and just click the little green lab flask in the upper right-hand corner, then that's how you get to the Labs.
My favorite Labs feature did not graduate, though. It's canned responses.
Yes.
Which probably only people with like insane amounts of email like I get would use, but love canned responses. And there are a few other really good ones.
Somebody said that it existed, but I can't find it anywhere. I want to be able to mark something not just in a filter to delete it from now on. I want to send the signal back to these PR people, and if the email has an unsubscribe option in it,
do it automatically.
I wanted to do that if I so request.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Because the problem for them is, at some point, you just make them spam, and that's not in their
interest. And that's what they don't want. They don't.
Right. The problem is that they don't know that you've done that. Like, I want to be able to mark somebody's email as spam and have Google send them a message and say, "This user reported you as spam. What are you doing?"
Right. Right.
Just to get to them, because it's satisfying to do that, but they don't know. So you want a canned response, Jeff, that basically says, please unsubscribe me from your list.
Oh, no, that clicks on that actually does the action. Clicks on the unsubscribe.
That clicks on that unsubscribe button.
And that's that. By the way, hint to PR people who send me irrelevant stuff. I'm going to sound like Michael Arrington for a moment here, but it's bad. And when I unsubscribe, I'm trying to shut you up. Don't send me another email saying, okay, you're unsubscribed. Just put salt on the wound, people.
No. Stop. That's funny. Somebody sent me a link in the chat room to an iPhone Explorer that allows me to browse files on my iPhone. Thank you. Oh. iPhone-explorer.com. And I just deleted all those pictures that I couldn't get rid of. So thank you. Chat room is very useful. And I might as well mention to Jeff that there is a suggest a lab feature. There's a link right at the bottom there where you can suggest that feature. There's quite a few in here, actually 42,725 to be exact. So you might not be like on the top of the list, but it'll be in there. Gina, I guess that could be your tip. How about that? That's your tip.
I do have a tip.
Okay.
This just launched this week. There's a new option in the side of your Google search results, location. So I just search for hamburgers because I'm going to have dinner soon because I'm in the East Coast. And so if you click on, do a Google search, click on show options, and down on the left side, under, you know, it says all results. If you hit social, we've talked about this already. That's results from your friends. If you click on nearby, you'll get location-based results.
Oh.
And there's a McDonald's in Asbury Park, New Jersey.
Oh, what a surprise.
Yes.
Wow. Look at, you even get image results. Ooh, local image results. Hey, this is great.
Yeah.
This, you know, actually was one of the stories we were going to talk about is they are slowly rolling out the new Google search UI. And so there's a three column thing. And you're going to, if you don't already see these extra features, you're going to start seeing them soon. This is really, I think this is great. Anyway,
yeah,
I can narrow
it down
only
makes sense.
Yeah.
It only makes sense.
Makes it much more useful. And you could turn it on and off, so it's not like you have to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. There's your nearby tip. And now, Jeff.
All right. The number is a bit of a cheat, but what the heck?
What's 323, though? You said that. What was that?
March 23rd, Nexus One, Verizon.
Got it.
It was a cheat. I bet it was, yes, it was a cheater. Tacky thing for me to
you're
try to
cheater.
Do. So I'll use a news story here, and the number is 100 plus, which is the number of companies targeted by the Google hackers, according to security vendor ISIC Partners. This from Robert McMillan at Computer World. And that they've identified 34 hack companies after examining a single command and control server used in the Google attack. Then the discovery of another 68 servers could mean that many more companies were compromised than previously thought.
Wow.
So they think it's over 100 companies.
Wow.
Which I wish that these companies would stand up and say so, because they've got to, you know, stand Google standing out there all alone and naked fighting this.
Yeah. My tip of the week comes from the Google page itself. If you go to google.com, and it's a timely one, you want to know more about Chile and the magnitude 8.8 earthquake. For those of us who live in San Francisco and lived through a 6.9 20 years ago, 8.8 is unimaginable. Google's got a crisis response page. This is something they've done. They've always done so well, and they're doing it once again with donations to UNICEF, direct relief, resource updates, a link to the State Department for friends, Americans with friends in Chile or family in Chile, a map mashup that includes a person finder, where you can either say I'm looking for someone or I have information about someone. So useful. And Google's always been
very good. And it's good that Google does that, because during Katrina, there were 100 people finders. So you had to have a people finder to find the people finders.
Yep.
And you've got to centralize this.
Yep. Centralize it.
Yeah. And it's built on Google Apps Bot, which is interesting as well.
And that's neat.
Yeah.
So did they do this, or did somebody?
I'm not sure who built this. I imagine they did it if it's on their official kind of Chile page.
Yeah, it's on
Chile. But several people Twittered this to me, this person finder. It's chilepersonfinder.appspot.com.
Right. Very
cool. So I assume that this was an internal thing, but it's neat that they deployed it on AppSpot so quickly.
Boy, it's just really neat. I mean, this is where, you know, you could really step up and make a huge difference, and they've really done that. It's a Creative Commons licensed under Apache 2.0 license.
Oh, good.
So, it's a person finder at googlegroups.com for the mailing list. Well, that's neat. I think that'll be used again and again.
Mm-hmm. Facebook will be patenting it soon.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was sitting on the wrong screen. There it is. That's the screen I was going to show you. Jeff Jarvis is the man in charge of buzzmachine.com. It's always great to have you on, Jeff.
Honored to be here, Leo.
We're going to have fun in Austin. We'll be doing This Week in Google in 2 weeks from Austin. From South by Southwest, which will be so much fun, wearing our Google slankets.
Can't wait. Yay.
And we will have a chat. And so we will go.
Yes. Go
we will go. I'll give you each a candle. Keep the open flame away from the slanket. and we will go down the road. We're going about a block away in our slankets, chanting our chant. Look for that. It'll be a highlight of your South by Southwest. Gina,
I have one request for all Leo's fans. Bail us out.
You know, we have a lot of fans in Austin. In fact, we did the Screensavers in Austin, and I remember we went to the County Line Barbecue, hint, hint, in Austin, and they fed us all, and it was the most amazing barbecue. They brought us a whole ton of stuff, right? And I ate and ate and ate, and they said, okay, next round, and they brought us a whole ton of more stuff. And it was an endless barbecue, and then we went in the smokers, and I think my clothes, 5 years later, still have just a little tang of hickory. from that. It was amazing. It was really fun. I cannot wait. We're going to have a good time. I'm at the Omni. Are you guys downtown or are you?
Yeah, I'm at the
hotel that's downtown. Where are you?
The Driscoll. Yeah.
I'm across the street from the convention center.
Good. So we're all in the same. We're all
you
downtown.
You planned ahead, Gina, and did it early enough.
Oh, no. You're at the best hotel, though.
I did. Well, one year I waited too late and wound up hiking across town in sandals, and it was really bad. So now I book in it was like 4 or 5 months ago that I booked my hotel because I was just like, I will get into the Hilton.
But I like the Driscoll. I think that's going to be fun. I've always wanted to stay there.
Bring in Jake.
Are you?
All right.
Well, Jake should come on the show then.
Great.
I don't have a slanket for him. You'll have to, he'll have to improvise.
We'll fit in together.
He can wear a muumuu. Oh, yeah. Just, you know, one sleeve each. Gina Trapani is at smarterware.org, and don't forget her complete guide to Google Wave at thecompletewaveguide.com. Her book all about how to use Wave. We thank you all for joining us. Remember, we do this show live at 2:15 Pacific, 5:15 Eastern every single Saturday afternoon at live.twit.tv, so you can watch us. And of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or the Zune feed or anywhere you get anywhere better podcasts are found. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.